The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox just faced the New York Yankees, losing two games out of the three, getting outscored 26-19. Current check of the standings, Red Sox are still in third, 55-49, the record, 6.5 games back behind the Orioles, and are fourth in the wild card standings behind the Royals by one game. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jason Kelly, coming to us from Canton by way of Westwood, Massachusetts, and Nick Diamond, coming to us from Broward County, Florida. Jason, how are you? It's been a little bit since we got to work together.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. I'm doing well. Feels good to be in the what I would deem to be the a-hole chair this time instead of the host chair. So a little bit of a different scenario for me. So happy to be on with you guys.
Yeah, you've been crushing it. It's nice to hear you on my my runs in the morning. You guys have fun, and I get to play with the other crew. And Nick, good to see you. First time we get to work together since the whole interview process. Jason, where can the fans find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Color of the Iris, and that's color spelled the British way, O-U-R, because that's the correct way.
And Nick, where can the fans find you, and how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you? I'm glad to be in my first show with you, so I'm looking forward to it. And you guys can find me on Twitter at ndiamondmedia, so N, and then diamond like the gem, and then media.
And diamond spelled the right way, D-I-A-M-O-N-D.
Correct.
That's a Jason joke because we do color differently there. Sorry. Anywho, for those that are listening, you'll notice that Terry is not on the show. Terry is well. He is at a tournament playing the one game that he loves almost as much as baseball. So he will be with us later on in the week. But while we have the three of us, that was a little bit of a rough series, a little bit of disappointment, I think, coming in each of those games in particular. As we lost the series, why don't we lead off with our dud? Jason, in the A chair, go first.
Yeah, it feels bad doing this. Feels like picking on the kid, but I'm going to go with Jamie Westbrook. And really, the larger point here is it's not on him, right? He's just not a big league player. He's a 4A player at best, right? Career minor leaguer. Got a shot because of injuries. You know, I know they call him the barrel man down in Worcester because he, you know, if he runs into one, he can really hit it. But he's not a big league player. And him being in the lineup twice in this series, going 0-for-4, really just giving you absolutely nothing at the plate, it really is a glaring sort of sign. Like, why haven't they added another right-handed bat that can handle left-handed pitching? They added Danny Jansen, who doesn't hit lefties that well. He's hitting .212 this year. His splits are a little better against lefties, but all six of his home runs have come against righties. He has no homers against lefties. So, like, I think that's more of a sign. Maybe Toronto just didn't play him against lefties that much, but you need another guy like a Rob Refsnyder in that lineup who crushes lefties. It's been one of their biggest problems all season, and they're relying on a career minor leaguer in Jamie Westbrook to try and do it. It's not good enough, and they got to get moving here because – deals are being made. Esau Paredes moved to the Cubs. The Yankees went out and got Jazz Chisholm, which we heard about 19,000 times on the ESPN broadcast. So, like, get a move on because Jamie Westbrook is not going to get it done. And these are important games. These are important series that you need to be winning, and you need better options off your bench. So again, it's kind of mean picking on Westbrook. It's not really his fault. It's more just a larger problem with the organization, how they've handled things so far. You know, another example of a flawed roster, you know, coming, you know, sort of coming to fruition there. So Westbrook's just not going to get it done. They need to upgrade that spot on the bench, because you saw it, he just gets overmatched, and it was a big problem in the series.
Yeah, Nick.
So my dud so far in this series is Cutter Crawford, and I'll give my reason why. Coming off a few good starts, Cutter Crawford has kind of turned it back around to how he was in April, where he was dominant. And I was really expecting him to come into Fenway Park and just beat the Yankees how he did last time in Yankee Stadium, except his home run problems came back and haunted him again. He gave up back-to-back homers to Soto and Judge. He gave another home run to Oswaldo Cabrera late in the game, or around like the fifth inning. And he gave it five runs again, and then the Red Sox and the Yankees went back and forth, and the bullpen couldn't hold it, and was just another loss. So I expected more for Cutter Crawford, especially after Alex Cora and the Red Sox went out of their way to give him a little bit of extra rest. I would really like him to perform against the Yankees on a big stage.
Now I hear that. Anything you want to add about Westbrook before we get into the Cutter thing? Because I got some stuff I want to say.
So with Westbrook, man, he's not a Major League Baseball player, like Jason said. So there's not much you can say about him. I do feel bad for him, but I would love to move on from him as soon as possible. You know, I'd rather have Connor Wong at second base at this point, because you just went out and bought another catcher. So you might as well just get Connor Wong and Jansen in the game if you're going to put Westbrook in the game.
Yeah, I feel bad for Westbrook too. I mean, for the entire month of July, this kid's only had two hits, and one of them was a home run. Outside of that, he's had one hit. It was a double against Kansas City. He doesn't get regular reps, and there's a reason for that. No, he doesn't strike out all that often, but this is a 29-year-old kid who, you know, waited a really, really long time. He's got a great story, but unfortunately, I don't see how he fits into the long-term plans for this team. I mean, you can't be going 0-for in a really big series against like the New York Yankees. You just can't do it. We need to have some kind of production. And if we're not getting anything against, you know, if you're not like a specialty player where you can, you know, you excel against righties or lefties, there really is no purpose for you there. Like against lefties, he's done okay. Against righties, he's irrelevant. He's had one hit, one RBI, strikes out half the time against righties. So, I mean, I really think the Boston Red Sox will be seeing Jamie Westbrook for just this year for a little while longer. And I think that's going to be it, because I don't see how he fits, to be completely honest. Anything else that we want to add on Westbrook?
No, I just think, again, it's tough to put it all on his shoulders. You know,
yeah,
he's put into a tough spot here, but they had to have known that, like, it was not going to be good enough. And the fact that you're reaching that far down into your depth chart to get Jamie Westbrook MLB at bats, that shows how badly they constructed this roster.
Yeah. I mean, if you can even call it that, because constructing a roster actually takes effort, and it just didn't feel like there was much put into it. So I know that we talked a little bit about Westbrook, and we shifted into Cutter for a second. Jason, is there anything you want to talk about with Cutter?
Yeah, this guy's starting to get tattooed, and it's a little bit concerning. The home run ball is becoming a major problem for him, and it's mislocation. You know, he's got the stuff. He's always had good stuff, but now he's leaving his fastball like middle and up to guys like against guys like Aaron Judge, and you know, you can't do that. So I think Cutter will be okay, but I think that once again, this shows why they need to go out and add some starting pitching, because you know, we talk about these guys. We talked about it heading into this year that Crawford, Houck, Bayo, you know, they were going to be tested in terms of how many innings they're going to be asked to pitch this year. And I think Crawford, you're starting to see that now, that maybe there's some fatigue there. Maybe that's why he's starting to have some command issues. That's why he's leaving pitches where they shouldn't be. I know they tried to give him some extra rest, but I just think, you know, you really are stretching this pitching staff a lot. You saw it with Houck too. Like, he's starting to look a little fatigued and his command is starting to wane. So again, it just stresses why they need to go out and add starting pitching, and not just, you know, washed up James Paxton. You need to go out and add someone legitimate, because you might have to start like skipping starts for some of these guys just to kind of get them back on track. And you can't afford to do that without much pitching depth, because you're still in a position where you need to win games and you need to gain ground in the wild card race. So Cutter, I think, is just a victim of sort of fatigue. And again, just, you know, there's not really much help on the way. So if they don't add another legit starter, you're going to get more outings like this where, you know, Cutter's going to be asked to do too much. He's going to go up against a good lineup and he's going to give up some bombs. And if Cutter Crawford really starts to go backwards, the outlook of the rest of the season looks very, very bleak for the Red Sox.
So Cutter, I mean, 8 home runs in his last 2 games. To say he's getting shelled is probably being a compliment. Watching that game last Sunday night, it was home run derby after home run derby. I mean, it was just awful. I mean, I'm watching the game here in LA, and I'm watching with my future father-in-law and my fiance, and I'm just sitting there. It's the loneliest feeling being a Red Sox fan against the Dodgers when people like Gavin Lux are hitting home runs. He doesn't hit home runs. He had another one, which is crazy. He's not a power hitter. But Shohei Ohtani tattooed one for 473 feet. I'm like, if you don't figure this out, dude, you're not going to last as a starter. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, here we are trading for starting pitching. But Jason, this was a position of depth that we had. I distinctly remember that comment being made. And you see Chris Sale, who's got a 13-3 record. He's on his way to surpassing the amount of total wins he had from 2019 all the way through 2023 with the Boston Red Sox, which is embarrassing. He's going to have pitched probably 175 innings. He's probably going to get the 200 strikeout marker. He's already at 149. He's got a sub 2.7 ERA. I mean, he's just been electric. And yeah, you can't predict injuries, but Chris Sale at the end of the day is one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's proven it year in and year out. And what you got was a prospect that we were really, really hopeful for who has not panned out. He's had one extra base hit, which he thought was a home run, and he pimped it. And it was so stupid because after that, he's been completely irrelevant. Cutter, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I was singing his praises before that Dodger start, and I said, this is a lockdown win. Terry will be the first one to say that he'll call anything but a sure bet win, because when he does that, we lose. And I mean, I was feeling the same thing. You know, this guy's pounding the strike zone. He's, you know, not prioritizing strikeouts, but prioritizing outs. 8 home runs was the total number of home runs he gave up in all of June. I mean, we are, you know, one really bad appearance away from probably having half of the home runs allowed on the season in the last 3 starts. I don't know what he needs to do to fix it, but it is it's an alarming situation for Cutter Crawford. I'm frustrated because we're losing games that we should be winning for not his fault, but I mean, when you allow 5 home runs and you allow 3 home runs, there's something wrong when you've done that, because the last 3 starts you hadn't allowed 1. And then the month before that, you were kind of getting tattooed. Your ERA was over 4, it was almost 4.5. Given up 8 home runs in 24 innings. We've now given up 9 home runs in 29 innings, but all that damage has been done in, you know, basically the last 2 starts. So, I mean, luckily July is over for him, so we won't have to sit on this one too much longer, but these are supposed to be the easy wins. Cutter Crawford, you mentioned Tanner Houck, Pivetta, Brian Bayo. Like, we thought, man, we should be winning 2, maybe 3 games out of this 5-man set. I don't think adding Paxton is going to all of a sudden create this revolutionary like mindset where now we're going to be winning 3. If you're giving up 3 home runs or 4 home runs in a game, and you're lucky, they were solo home runs against the Dodgers. If they had men on base, Crawford could have allowed 12 or 13 runs. The Dodgers have one of the most lethal offenses in all of baseball. The Yankees don't have all of their toys playing right now. Giancarlo Stanton is boom or bust, but he didn't play. He's coming back soon. I don't know. It's brutal. It's really, really hard to watch, and we need to figure it out, because it's not gonna end well, and this is gonna be a team that's gonna be sniffing 500 real quick in a couple of weeks if we can't start winning ball games. Anything else you guys want to add on Cutter? Cool. So my dud for this series is actually the third base coach for the Boston Red Sox. I don't know how many times we've made mistakes at third base where we've sent runners that shouldn't have been sent. We've been, you know, having runners tag up from third that shouldn't have tagged up. And then the biggest bonehead play, you steal second and third. You have a prime opportunity to score runs. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Abreu who flew out to right field, and the ball comes in, and they're talking to Matt Damon and Casey Affleck on the air, and they're just having like a grand old time because, you know, Yankees score three, Red Sox score three, they score one, we score one. It was just kind of back and forth where there's a lot of action, which made the game a little bit exciting. But then they said it was a hidden ball trick, and I'm like, hidden ball trick implies that the play, like, there's been nothing that happened just now. So ball comes in, they fire the ball to third, who just tags Seidon Rafaela, who's a foot and a half off third base, not paying attention. What are you doing at third base? You have one job. You literally have one job. Make sure the guy is touching third base. That's all you have to do. I don't care what else you're thinking about. I don't care if you had a bad day. You have one job. Make sure the runners can score from third base. And if the ball's coming into the infield, make sure the runner's standing on third base, because that was the biggest dumbass play I've seen this year for Boston. And it sucks. Rafael, as a youngster, you know, it sucks. It's a rookie mistake. He'll never make that mistake again, regardless of who the third base coach is. But honestly, that one play, if he's safe at third, we're up by one. We win the game by a run. Instead, this game goes to extra innings, and we figure out a way, like the Boston Red Sox do, unfortunately, the most Boston Red Sox thing ever. We lose it because of just a stupid play. It was not, you know, that was not the hidden ball trick. It was thrown to third, and he tagged him out. When I watched it again, I rewound it twice because I could not believe what I was seeing. Then I replayed it on their feed, and it was like they couldn't believe it happened. They're like, oh, throw to third. Seidon's not on third. And, oh, they got him out. They got him out. Inexcusable. Cannot happen again. And if you're the third base coach, you really got to be worried about your job, because these kinds of mistakes are costing us games. And we are in the position right now where if we don't start winning, we're not going to be in the playoffs. And Red Sox aren't adding right now. And plays like this aren't giving them a reason to do so. So, Jason, why don't you, you go first, and then Nick, why don't you go second?
Yeah, it's all about attention to detail, right? And that's the third base coach's job, is to keep an eye out for those details, make sure, you know, runner's foot is on the bag, make sure, you know, everything's good before you could potentially get picked off. Getting picked off at third base, like, never happens either. Like, that was the really, like, embarrassing part about it. Guys get picked off first base a lot. Pitchers have gotten really good at making good moves and being deceptive enough to do that. Getting picked off second, a little rarer, but still happens, especially at second base. You get a little bit of a bigger lead. The pitcher has a nice, good spin move. They can get you. Getting picked off at third base almost never happens. I don't know if I've ever seen it before this one. So, and I know a lot of teams try to do the hidden ball trick, stuff like that, but it generally never happens. And it just, it's one of those things that you just add it to the list of things to be pissed off about lately. That, and it's like way down on the list, sure, but like, it's still like you got picked off a third base in an important game against the Yankees. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's just another example of them not being fully dialed in since the All-Star break, not being ready to go. If the coaching staff is now like kind of not dialed in, then we've got a huge problem going on. So, and I don't know if it's just because there's a lot of pressure on them. If they're nervous about the deadline coming up, maybe some guys are nervous about getting moved. Maybe it's just, you know, the whole clubhouse is kind of, you know, on pins and needles. But yeah, it's the attention to detail still has to be there. You know, you've got to sort of separate things. Like, you can't just let the trade deadline and, you know, all that pressure seep in. You know, you still got to do your job on the field. So in general, I don't think that he's been terrible as a third base coach. I mean, I think there's a few times he's sent guys when he shouldn't. You know, he tends to send like the slower guys, and you know, it's like, ugh, dude, what are you doing? Is he, you know, in wave him home Wendell Kim territory? No. But he's definitely had a few hiccups, and this is one of them. It's just an embarrassing moment, you know, and it can't happen. Can't happen in a big series like that.
Yeah, Wendell Kim, that's a name you don't hear every day. One thing I remember from like our childhood, Nick, I think we got you by probably like 10 or so years. You're what, 25, 26?
Yeah, I'm 26 years old.
Yeah, so we got you by 10 years. Jason and I are on the older side, and Terry's got us by a couple. I think he's 40 or 41. Wendell Kim used to be our third base coach. He's since passed away. I forget how many years ago, but he used to book it to third base. He would run out as fast as possible to get to third base, and that was like one of his trademarks. And yeah, Jason, to your point, absolutely. Nick, anything you wanted to add?
There's nothing more I can really add. I mean, it was a complete lack of focus between both Hudson and Rafaela. I mean, it was embarrassing. You know, it turned out that it really did cost us the game, and the long run, it cost us a series. We'd probably be a lot more upbeat right now, a lot happier if we won on Saturday instead of, you know, just, well, you know, like it, we just lost two in a row in kind of an embarrassing fashion. And, you know, it just kind of was downhill since that play. So there's nothing more I can say about that. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the only thing that makes it worse is that, you know, we still have plenty of baseball. We got, you know, 60 games or so. What is it? This is game number, we've got 102. So we have 59 more games. We only have 161 on the season for this year. But yeah, it can't happen again. And it's going to be something to monitor moving forward. As far as dishonorable mentions, basically your entire bullpen. I mean, your entire bullpen fell apart. The first game, you know, you had six different relievers, two of those relievers, Brandon Bernardino and Zach Kelly, four earned runs in one inning of work on four hits, a walk, two home runs. Zach Kelly probably gave up a home run derby non-competitive pitch to Aaron Judge. The one player who does not there's one place you don't pitch to Aaron Judge. It's middle up, middle in. Don't throw it there. Why you do that for the very first – do you think you have the talent, without sounding disrespectful, to blow something by Aaron Judge? And with two men on, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure it was a three-run jack to deep center. And it was like one of the farthest home runs I've ever seen at Fenway Park. And they were talking about that as well. And then you follow that up with another home run. So you have those two in that game. In the second game, you've got four relievers that gave up runs. Chase Anderson, three runs, two of which were earned in an inning. He's now gone. Kenley Jansen, unfortunately, blew a save. He allowed a run in an inning. Bailey Horn, he's just been awful. He's not the answer. His ERA is almost seven. He's garbage. And Winkowski also fell apart. A run, walked two guys in a third of an inning. So four relievers, you know, in five and a third innings had given up five earned. It was just inexcusable. And then in this game, Boozer, Weiser, Criswell, three earned in three innings. I mean, Houck didn't do great. You know, Houck was a dud, I guess. I know Jeremy would say, you know, you got a quality start, but you walked four, you allowed three runs. It wasn't really pretty. You only struck out two. He might actually let me have that one if Jeremy's listening to this one. But your relievers, they didn't have it. Weiser was exposed. Boozer just had a bad game. And he's been relatively consistent, relatively good. But Criswell, like, I don't have any confidence in Criswell anymore either. Like, my confidence meter is gone on all of them. But, I mean, say what you want to say about some of the hitters in this series that didn't do great. As bad as they did, the relievers were worse. At the beginning of the year, the Boston Red Sox pitching, whether it be starters or relievers, were the tops. They were number one in Major League Baseball. They had the lowest ERA. I don't remember the exact number. It was like, Jason, you might know, 1.8 or 1.76 ERA, something like that. That was the starting ERA for the, you know, month of April, and we were crushing it. Like, we were doing way above the expectation, you know, exceeding the call of duty. And the bullpen was doing great, but then you're starting to see starters not go as long. Relievers are starting to get taxed, and it's May going into June. Now it's towards the end of July. We still have two more months, and your relievers are giving up two runs, three runs, four runs, five runs in relief per game. Now I get it. It's the New York Yankees, and they're the Yankees. They're going to continue adding and doing whatever they need to do for the playoff push. Yankees got Jazz Chisholm. Jazz Chisholm made us look foolish. They got their eighth run because we weren't paying attention, and Jazz was able to take third. Sac Fly brings him in. Done. Just like that. Another run. Stupid. We're just – it's just – it's lack of attention to detail. And I, Jason, I don't remember if it was you or Nick that said that, but we're just – we're not paying attention. I feel like this team is not playing with care, and they're not playing with the passion that they did play with before the All-Star break. We're 2-7 now after the All-Star break. 2-7 is not going to get it done. And it's not like the games are close. You know, we lost by 6. Then we allowed 11 runs in the second game. Yeah, you scored 8 runs, but you allowed 11. So I don't really care. And the last one, in the first game, we won 9-7, but you allowed 7 runs. You're now forcing your offense to really light up the Christmas tree in order for you guys to win ball games. Because if you don't score a minimum of 5 or 6 runs, you're not winning any of these games. You literally needed 8 runs minimum to win one game. And for the other ones, you needed 10. It's just, you know, it's not enough. And if this isn't a sign that you need to get another bat, Breslow, Jansen's not it. You need to go out and get another piece. And it's going to involve you letting go of someone that you're not going to want to, but that's what it's going to take. Jason, anything you want to add to any of those other duds?
Yeah, your bullpen is one big bag of suck right now. And a big part of it, too, is Martin and Slayton are still out. So that certainly doesn't help you. Jansen's been good, but in this series, I mean, even the save he picked up, he gave up a couple of hits, and it was like, got a little dicey there. He had a couple runners on base, kind of had to get himself out of a jam there. Then obviously, you know, blew the save the other night, too. But I mean, just look at some of those names that you rattled off: Greg Weissert, Bailey Horn, Cooper Criswell, like Chase Anderson. This is not a big league bullpen. These are all like 4A players who on good teams would not be in the major league bullpen. So it's just, again, like we talk about it all the time, but it's like this, the flawed roster construction, like, and Bernardino was really, really good first half of the year. I don't know what's happened to him. He's gone completely backwards, but he was nails in the first half. So I don't have an issue with him necessarily, but like Weissert has never been good this entire season. Like every time he comes in, you're like, well, he's going to give up at least one run. Let's see how bad it gets. I'm not a big Zach Kelly guy. I know that there's a big portion of, you know, Red Sox fans that love him. I think the guy is below average at best. And, you know, you saw it. He goes up against Aaron Judge and look what happened. 473 feet to dead center. I mean, that thing was a bomb. So it just reminds me of like the days we had like Caleb Ort coming out of the bullpen. Like it's that caliber of player that they've got in the bullpen. It's not good enough. And the problem is like they need to, if they want a real bullpen that's going to like help them in the playoffs, if they get there, they're going to have to get like 3 or 4 guys. You can't just go out and get one reliever and it's all fixed. Now that's probably what they'll do because it's like, well, we only needed the one guy because Slayton will come back. Martin will come back and everything will be fine. I don't think it will be. I don't know. Martin has not been the same this year. Slayton was a Rule 5 guy that's been better than you expected, but he might start to go backwards when he gets back. So you just don't know. And if they end up trading Kenley Jansen, your bullpen gets even worse after that. So we don't even know what they're going to do with him. It's just, again, not good enough. It's not good enough. And the starters are getting taxed, and now the bullpen, as a result of that, is getting taxed. And it's just, it's too early for that stuff to be happening. Like in September, I get it. So towards the end of the season, sure. In July, you can't be getting taxed that bad. It's not a good sign going forward.
No, and real quick, Nick, you're absolutely right about Bernardino. Bernardino was absolute nails to start the season. But then he went a streak of, I think, if I'm looking at this correctly, 12 or 13 straight appearances where he didn't even go an inning. So then you start talking about Bernardino being kind of like a gimmick pitcher. He's going to come in for like 1 or 2 guys, maybe a third guy, or just like 1 or 2, and that's the end of the inning. You get to start a clean inning. But, you know, he was going an inning at the beginning of the year. At the age of 32, I expect you to still be able to handle yourself. And lately, he's been going an inning. But ever since he came into that Dodgers game and was directly responsible for giving up an absolute missile to Freddie Freeman, bags juiced, bringing all 3 ducks around, he has not been the same. His confidence is shattered. He's pitched 3 2/3 since that game. He's allowed 3 runs on 6 hits. He has only a couple of strikeouts. Excuse me, he has five strikeouts, but that was his first home run to a left-handed hitter ever. That's why they brought him in. And so people had asked, like, oh, why was he in there? Look at the numbers. I mean, that was just a – we're looking at the metrics. I think we're looking at the you know, what are the odds type thing. If he gets on base – Freddie Freeman with the bases loaded, I think this year was 6-for-10 with a grand slam already. So why you're loading up the bases to face Freddie Freeman blows my mind away. But again, you're going with the idea of lefty-lefty, good situation – Will Smith at the time wasn't doing great, but Will Smith had a higher probability of getting a hit than Freddie Freeman. What were the odds of Will Smith getting a hit over Freddie Freeman hitting a grand slam? A lot higher. So it was just really, really unlucky. But, you know, Kenley Jensen not being in the last series too. I mean, with the heart issue, I mean, I can relate. I've had one too. And, you know, not just from like sports and things like that, just a couple of things, but they won't risk it. The Dodgers also did not risk it with Kenley Jensen playing up in the higher elevated stadiums like Colorado. And he also, you know, when he faced his former team, he got shelled by the Dodgers too. It was, you know, it would have been great to see him do well. But right now, your relievers, this ain't it. And even the additions so far at the deadline, I'm not looking at this as we're going to get a better, you know, number of wins above replacement. I don't think this moves the needle. Nick, anything you'd like to add, my friend?
About the bullpen, there's not much more I can add. We all know it's been horrendous for the last 20-ish games since Martin and Slayton have been, you know, gotten hurt. The only other thing you brought up, like going into the playoffs, like without adding a right-handed bat and to add on to the offense. But if you don't add on to the pitching in both the starting rotation and the bullpen, you're going to go into a three-game playoff series, maybe wild card series, against the Twins, the Royals, the Yankees, the Mariners, whoever it is, with Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, and Nick Pivetta maybe as your three starter. That is, you're not going to win a single game. And then if one of them does have a good four innings and you're competing with like a, you're down by one, you're bringing in Cooper Criswell as your like reliever. I mean, this team cannot compete in the playoffs with these pitchers on the team. It doesn't matter how much you add to the offense.
Absolutely. So that is going to cap it for our dud section. Let's move it over to something a little bit more positive. There were only a few, so this shouldn't be too hard. Jason, why don't you lead us off with yours?
Yeah, my stud for the series is Rob Refsnyder. Thank God for this guy. Seriously, I went to look at his stats. I wanted to see what his WAR was on the year. It's only 0.7. I'm guessing that's because he's not a full-time player. You know, he's not in the lineup every day. I think defensively he's average, but he's hitting .311 this year. Had another, you know, three-hit game early in the series, hit a bomb in the finale. This guy continues to just crush left-handed pitching whenever he's in the lineup. And even actually against right-handed pitching, he's doing just fine. I mean, he's really putting in probably the best season of his career. And sure, that's not saying much. He's been a bit of a journeyman, you know, utility guy, never a full-time player. You know, finally comes to Boston, finds a good role for himself. But I feel like without Rob Refsnyder, our record would be so much worse than it is. I just feel like he's come up clutch in so many big games this year. Again, his versatility is so important to this club, being able to play the outfield, being able to play the infield if they need him to. He's shown a lot more power this year, which has been nice to see. He's a winning type of ball player. I mean, this is a guy that they are very lucky to have him. He's the kind of player that other teams would love to acquire at the trade deadline. Like, seriously, if the Red Sox were in sell mode, they'd be getting calls about Rob Refsnyder. He's that important. So it's good that they've got him. It's good that, you know, they've already got him in house. They don't have to try to go out and trade for a guy like that. But, you know, to my earlier point about Westbrook, like, you need almost like another Refsnyder, because him alone is not, you know, he can't do it all by himself. So if they were able to go out and get someone like that, it would just mean so much to this offense. He's so important to the team. I'm glad that he's having a career year. I'm glad that they're trusting him and they're playing him in a lot of important games, not just against lefties, because he's proven that, you know, he can do the job. So he's very important. He's going to be very crucial to them down the stretch, and keep putting him in the lineup. honestly, just, you know, against righties, lefties, I don't care. Just get him at bats because he's red hot right now. So, and they need someone like him to stay red hot and keep producing runs for them.
Yeah. Nick?
So when Chaim Bloom extended Rob Refsnyder last year, I thought it was a very, very weird move. But of course, Rob Refsnyder is exactly what we need. If we had 9 Rob Refsnyders, we would win a lot more games. You know, he hits lefties. It's exactly what we need at the deadline. We need multiple guys that can hit lefties, except besides Connor Wong and Rob Refsnyder, we have nobody. So Rob Refsnyder is very underrated, and I'm a guy who has not liked Chaim Bloom in the past, haven't said a lot of nice things about him, but that was a great extension by him to get Rob Refsnyder under team control for another year. So good for him there, giving him a little bit of props there.
Yeah, you're in a large company of those that were not happy with moves that Bloom had made. Yeah, I was one of those people that didn't really understand what the Rob Refsnyder business was all about. I didn't see him having a future here. This is a guy whose numbers had tailed off significantly. He was already 32, 33. He was not a power hitter at the time, but has since really, really improved. You know, in relation to last year, his numbers, he's already surpassed his numbers from last year. He's got 5 homers as opposed to, you know, just the lone home run. He's got 26 RBIs. He's 2 RBIs away from matching last year. Stolen bases haven't been a thing. Strikeout numbers are about the same. He's drawing a really good amount of walks, and he's hitting .310. So say what you want, the guy's doing his job. So I'm not expecting Rob Refsnyder to be your all-star, superstar, whatever, but that's kind of what's happening. I mean, he's putting together really, really good games. Before tonight's action, he was 5 for his last 9 with a couple of extra base hits, 3 RBIs, and only 1 strikeout. So little pieces like that, when you think about it, just $2 million, you know, that's what it's going to cost the Red Sox if they don't end up doing some kind of, you know, re-sign, because he's getting just under $2 million this year. And then there's, like, I think a buyout for the following year in 25. And who knows what will happen. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get Refsnyder again, because I really don't know if any of us are going to raise our hand and say, yes, we trust the options that we have in both our outfield and our infield. Infield's also got its own dilemmas, but I'm super impressed with what we've seen with Rob this month and last as well. I mean, he's been a rock when we needed him the most. Last month hit over 300. You know, the home run number wasn't there, but you know what? You're still hitting 300. You're doing your job. So no complaints. Anything else we want to add on Rob? Perfect. Let's move into Nick, your stud.
So I picked Tyler O'Neill this week. The reason why I did that is I feel like at least once a week, this guy has a 2 home run game, and he did it again on Saturday. 2 home runs, 4 RBIs on Saturday, had another RBI on Friday. So he gets hot. He's very streaky, and right now he's hot, and he can carry a team while he's hot. Unfortunately, the pitching hasn't lived up to their end of the bargain, but Tyler O'Neill's on one of his hot streaks, and I'd love to ride it and hopefully get some more wins coming up. The only thing I can mention about him that's a little bit downside, he did cost a run in the outfield today with a little bit of an error in right field that led to an unearned run for Hauk. But if he keeps hitting 2 home runs every few games, you know, I can't get mad at him for that kind of play out there.
Jason.
Yeah, I sort of half jokingly tweeted, a week, 2 weeks ago that I think the Red Sox should extend Tyler O'Neill rather than trade him and, you know, and I still kind of actually believe that. I would even, you know, if you want to give him the qualifying offer, that way you get a pick if he signs somewhere else, I'm fine with that too. I'm not sure I'm ready for them to move on from Tyler O'Neill. I'm really not. And I wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the season because he does have a history of health problems and he can be very inconsistent. He is a streaky hitter, like Nick mentioned. But I think he's kind of reached a new level now. I mean, he's a guy that pitchers fear. And you kind of put him either before Devers or behind him, whatever, but it helps protect Rafael Devers as well. Hopefully, if you somehow can get Casas back here, that's a good 1-2-3. You know, Devers, O'Neill, Casas, that's pretty good right in the middle of your lineup. So I think he's really important to this team. I really don't want them to deal him, but I understand that, you know, Breslow's probably going to get a lot of calls about Tyler O'Neill. And we've already seen some of the trades that have happened, like some top prospects are flying off the board. And some of these deals, like guys who, you wouldn't expect to fetch top prospects are doing it. You know, so what would Tyler O'Neill get? Like he might get you someone really special. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough the next 48 hours for Breslow to decide, you know, what he's going to do with him. But he's on a tear right now. And I just think if you take him out of this lineup, if you trade him, you know, before Tuesday, your lineup just looks so much weaker, because then who's protecting Devers? It's going to be Connor Wong. I mean, I like Connor Wong, but he's, you know, he's not exactly a big threat to a lot of pitchers. I think they kind of know how to pitch around him. You know, after that, you don't have the source of right-handed power that you do if O'Neill is there. So again, he's a guy that's winning you ball games right now. And, you know, Nick mentioned, yeah, he did make, you know, an error in left field. Some of his defense can be a little bit sloppy. We've dealt with that before. Hunter Renfroe is no different. This guy's better than Renfroe, though. He's a more impactful bat. So I don't know what his future holds, whether, you know, beyond the deadline or even, you know, after this season. But I think at least for 2024, you've got to hang on to him. And then, you know, decide what you want to do in the offseason, whether you want to extend him. You know, does he kind of take a cheaper extension to stay here, or does he want to test the market and really, you know, try to really cash in, in which case you let him walk? Do you give him the qualifying offer? I don't know. But his right-hand power is too valuable in this lineup. You got to keep him.
Yeah, I think you ended up getting a little roasted by somebody. I forget. I don't think it was Johnny Fontaine, but there was somebody who roasted it. And I remember thinking, yeah, I mean, before today's action, guys got six homers in the last six games. And yes, that happened all in three games. I don't care. If you're averaging a home run a game, it means you're averaging at least an RBI game. So you're at the very least doing your job. To your point, Nick, I agree with you. You can have an ugly error in the outfield, but if you hit two home runs and four RBIs in a game, kind of selfish if we were to kind of call you out for that. So Tyler O'Neill in this series did fine. I'm not going to complain. Again, four for, I think it was 11, if I'm not mistaken, had the two home runs, had five RBIs, did strike out a decent number, you know, three times in this one, had that costly error. But, you know, was it the error that broke the camel's back in the sense of that error cost us the game? No, we weren't scoring. We weren't hitting. We weren't doing anything in that game. So it just was really unfortunate. There's no question. All of the offense in our game happened on two swings in one inning, back to back. And it was great, but it just wasn't enough. So Tyler O'Neill has been absolutely on fire. Since that game against the Dodgers, he's had four multi-hit games. He's been able to bring his batting average up from 260 to 275. He's had 22 home runs. That's the second most in his career. Obviously, the 34 in 2021 were the most. And I'm not going to be surprised if he goes 30, you know, 75 or something like that. It was kind of weird. He didn't hit home runs with people on base, so he had a very weird slash. It was like 10 home runs and 13 RBIs. It was really goofy. Like, you refuse to hit with people on base. I forget who it was. Maybe it was Jeremy that made that comment. But it was just kind of funny. Like, wow, it's really wild. Like, do you do something really different when people are not on base? Or maybe people are just pitching you different. I think they just want to, you know, they're not afraid to give you pitches over the plate because there's a decent chance that they could strike you out too. Guys struck out 106 times so far this year in 284 plate appearances. This is a 200 strikeout candidate if he's about to get 600 at-bats. Yeah, to your point, I mean, I don't hate the idea of re-signing Tyler O'Neill, and it could be a team-friendly deal if he's really enjoying himself. But if Tyler O'Neill goes out there and says, yeah, I really want to get paid, Boston's not going to be the team to do it. They're not going to get somebody like this. I mean, they had the opportunity to get Teoscar Hernandez. I believe it was two years, 28 is what they offered. Had they given him 3 for 42, which Terry mentioned on one of the prior shows was the same that Lourdes Gurriel got, we could have had him. That's embarrassing. Because literally 2 for 28 is what you offered. He signed for $5 million less. That's it. Or 4.5, excuse me. He signed for 1 year, 23.5 in LA. And he has completely just incorporated himself into the LA culture. I mean, their team is disgusting. Even if you take Teoscar Hernandez, they still have right now, there's no Mookie Betts. Freddie Freeman is out of the lineup right now because his son is dealing with a viral infection. But Max Muncy's not there. And they're still winning games. I mean, it's really, really crazy. So Tyler O'Neill, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, if they are unable to retain someone like Teoscar Hernandez, it wouldn't surprise me if someone like Tyler O'Neill ends up being their replacement in LA, because all of a sudden now I feel like whatever players leave Los Angeles come to the Red Sox, and whoever leaves the Red Sox goes to the Dodgers. It's like there's really only one team we can trade with and pick players off of waivers from. It's kind of ridiculous, but that's what's been happening. Anything else that you guys want to add with Tyler O'Neill?
Yeah, the one thing I will say, I think he's also very important to the team culture, because game one, he gets pinch hit for in a big spot. And a guy like that, you don't expect to be pinch hit. He's like one of your biggest power bats, but Cora pressed the right button, put Abreu in instead. And Tyler O'Neill is up on the top step, like doing the bear crawl thing, cheering on Abreu, wasn't pouting, didn't look upset, was cheering on the team. So that's huge for a guy like him who is essentially in a contract year. And he gets pinch hit for in a big spot like that, a lot of players would not take that well. A lot of players would pout, or they would be, you know, visibly upset. They might say something after the game. O'Neill didn't. O'Neill was happy. Red Sox win. He was cheering on his teammate. I think that's huge. So I think he's also a really good clubhouse guy as well.
That matters when you think about it too, because it's all it takes is one clubhouse cancer, and you've got the cascading effects of what will happen. Johnny Fontaine, one of our followers, we've had, you know, patty cakes a couple times back and forth, all in good fun. But every single time he comes up to the plate, I think of him. And I said that, I just tweeted him. I was like, I think of you every single time he comes to the plate. He goes, it sounds like you have like an unhealthy obsession or something like that with me. And I'm like, dude, no, it's just like you and I. I mean, I was telling you that I'm a pro Neil fan. I am pro Neil. And there's nobody on this crew that likes O'Neill as much as I do. And I don't think there was anybody that liked, you know, Chris Sale as much as I did either. So that's why I'm doubly upset that, you know, Sale's having a great year. If he didn't have a great year this year, I still would have been sad that he wasn't with us, because the return was zero. So O'Neill's doing great. He's probably going to end up with 30 home runs. If he doesn't hit 30, he'll be off by one. I don't think he's going to hit more than 70 to 75 RBIs. He just doesn't seem to get that many RBIs with people in scoring position. It would have been amazing if he had that grand slam. Unfortunately, it just ended up being a sack fly against the Yankees. But, you know, he's doing his job. Jason, you brought up a huge point. He's up on, you know, right at the top of that dugout, cheering on his team in a very meaningful and important at-bat. You know O'Neill wanted that at-bat, and they were talking about it too. But in the moment, he just said, okay, you're obviously pulling me for a reason. Let's just see what happens. And at no point did anyone think that he was upset. He is a gamer. I mean, you strike out 100 times in, you know, at the halfway mark, and you're not like upset or frustrated. I mean, the guy's just having fun. The guy also looks like, you know, Mr. World. His dad, I think, is former Mr. Olympia or something like that. And he's the same thing. Like, the man is, I don't, if you threw something at him, if you hit him, you might break the ball. He's just that strong. He's that big, but he's exciting, and he's going to continue being with us hopefully for the rest of the year. Nick, anything else you want to add, my friend? Cool. So for my dud in this one, Rafi Devers. It's been a while since I've picked Rafi, but had a really solid series, had five hits in this one, total 12 at-bats, four singles, had a big triple, and that really should have been a double. If anybody else is manning second field other than Jazz Chisholm, who has 5 minutes of experience playing at Fenway Park, it felt like there's no way Devers is sitting at third base or standing at third. So Devers is rounding or coming up to second base. Jazz Chisholm is charging the monster. The ball bounces, goes over his glove, and rather than giving effort, he just kind of stood there like, oh, crap, I can't believe that just happened. And I think it was Verdugo who got the ball and ended up throwing it in. I can't remember, but Devers is standing at third base. And I mean, it's great. It's great that it happened, but unfortunately it was a little bit too little too late. Jason, anything you want to add for Devers?
Yeah, he's just been Mr. Consistent all season. I mean, and you know, really he's putting together, I think, one of the best years of his career. I looked it up. He finished 18th in the MVP voting last year. He's going to finish way closer this year, if he keeps this up. He should be a top five candidate. He's got the power numbers. His defense has actually been solid. He hasn't been a problem at third base. Now, he hasn't been, you know, gold glove caliber, but, you know, it's not the Rafi Devers that we saw a couple years ago where he's, you know, throwing balls in the dirt or he's, you know, bumbling stuff. He looks a little more dependable over there. So that's been great too. He's pretty much stayed healthy except for the little shoulder problem around the All-Star break, but they did the smart thing. They kept him home. And he was able to rest the shoulder, and he had that weird sort of fall in Colorado. We all went, oof, uh-oh. But he looks okay, looks to be fine. So, again, he's putting together such a great year. It's just a shame that, like, he doesn't have a lot of help around him. You know, it's like and Costas being hurt, you know, obviously doesn't help. But yeah, it's just, again, this is why I think keeping O'Neill is so important, because you take him away, Devers protection goes away, and then he's going to start getting walked more. He's not going to get pitched to. Right now they have to pitch to him, and he's crushing it. So it's been great to see. Just, you know, you can always depend on him. He really hasn't had like a cold streak all year. It doesn't feel like it anyway. The power's been there, you know, average is up. He's taking a lot more walks now. He's not striking out as much, which is huge as well. So yeah, just Mr. Consistent, should be a top five MVP candidate. And, you know, just thank God we signed him. Thank God they actually, you know, laid out the money and extended him, because he's going to be a cornerstone here for a long time. Thank God.
Yeah. Nick?
There's not enough things, or not enough good things you can say about Devers right now. I mean, he's going to have probably 40 homers for the first time in his career. He's going to at least have 100 RBIs. I mean, that's who he is. He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. He's probably going to end up around 500 homers, you know. And like Jason said, he's been better defensively this year compared to last year and the years in the past. He did make a little bit of an error today, but whatever, everyone did. I think we had four errors today. The only thing I kind of want to discuss, and it's not anything bad about Devers at all, is on Saturday night, Devers was on deck. He was the last player. So I think it was Connor Wong batting third. I'm not 100% sure right now who made the last out, but I know Devers was the batter on deck in the 10th inning when the Red Sox lost on Saturday. My question to you guys is, when Casas does eventually come back, does Devers move back to the two hole and have the Duran, Devers, either O'Neill, you know, whoever right-handed bat you want in that third spot, and then go into Casas in the fourth spot, hopefully get Devers as many at-bats as possible? Do you think that's the right thing to do, or the Red Sox kind of took off when Cora moved him to the four hole? Do not mess with it.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think it really depends on how Casas looks when he comes back, because he's been out for a long time. It might take him a good 2-3 weeks to really get right again. And then who knows, it might be the end of the season by then. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know when he's going to come back. I know he's slated to go on a rehab assignment, but all it takes is one swing and he goes to the manager and says, yeah, something doesn't feel right. And we get the unexpected setback tweet and the timeline gets delayed. So it really will depend on how Casas looks when he gets back. If he's, you know, the same guy he was second half of the year or second half of last year from Jump Street, then yeah, I think so. Go Duran, Devers, O'Neill, Casas. Yeah.
Because I think it's a way to get him some protection, like you mentioned. Like, he doesn't have much behind him right now. I mean, if you can get O'Neill and then Casas back to back behind him, I think that'd be really beneficial for him and even make his season even better than it already is.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, no, I think to Jason's point, because you hit the nail on the head with the depending on what happens with Casas, I think the easy answer is yes. And the reason for that being is, yeah, if you're in the two hole as opposed to the four hole, you are more likely to get more at-bats, at the very least, hopefully one. And maybe that's all the Red Sox need. You know, the Dodgers did something different. Shohei Ohtani's been batting leadoff because Mookie Betts isn't there. So they're doing everything they possibly can to give Shohei Ohtani as many opportunities to slug home runs as possible. Would I ever consider putting Rafi Devers in the one hole? No, because I don't think it makes sense to move Jaron Duran out of the one hole position that he's been doing so well. If Jaron Duran wasn't there, I don't know, maybe tinker with it, because Duran's been elite, but if he's not there, if he's injured for whatever reason, God forbid, I'm knocking on wood so everyone can hear that. Yeah, I mean, Ohtani and Devers, you know, they're not the same. They're not in the same class of player. But I did find it really interesting that the Dodgers did that, because majority of the offense is going through Ohtani. It's going through Freddie Freeman. Will Smith has been struggling a little bit, but teams are doing weird things, you know. Like, I forget who the first team was that moved their power hitter into the two hole. I don't remember if it was the Yankees or if it was the Nationals with Soto before he went to San Diego. But I remember thinking, wow, that's weird. But I mean, I guess it is kind of smart to move your power guy into the two hole. It was like Madden having his pitcher bat eighth instead of ninth. It seemed kind of funny back when we had interleague games and that was happening, or the idea of having an opener to start the game just to get rid of the first three guys. But yeah, I mean, Devers is going to continue doing Devers things. And there are going to be, you know, those unlucky plays like that error. It was unfortunate. The game was just about over at that point anyways, but he's hitting over 320 for this month. He's had 5 home runs. He's had 19 RBIs before today's action. And he's been one of the more consistent guys. I know you mentioned that he might hit 40 home runs. I don't know if he's going to get 40. I hope, Nick, I hope he does get 40, but that might be asking for, that's a tall order. And depending on what players come back, it may not happen because some people may be more inclined to not pitch to Devers, but pitch to Casas because Casas right now is still, you know, practicing 30 minutes a day of taking dry swings in his head. And eventually those will be real swings and we're excited for that. Yeah, I mean, I think to answer your question, yes, Devers in the 2-hole would be the easiest solution once Casas comes back. Anything else that you guys want to add on Devers? All right, couple honorable mentions. Bayo had 5 innings of work, allowed 3 runs, so not crazy, but did decently in the series, all things considered. Allowed 1 home run, struck out 4. Masataka Yoshida, I'm starting to think that the reason why Terry didn't want to come on the show, even though he had a tournament, was because Masa did well. 4 RBIs in the series is pretty good, and you know the joke is that if we can get Terry to say something nice about Yoshida, that's a pretty good day. So 4 RBIs in that series, a couple of walks. They're all singles for the most part. Danny Jansen, our newest catcher, with Reese McGuire being DFA'd, he's gone. A couple singles in his first game with the Boston Red Sox. And then I don't know if I want to say Jaron Duran in here too, but Jaron's been one of the more consistent guys. And even if he has a bad series, 3-for-15, he did have the sombrero in game 1, struck out 6 times, but another double, and he's just been one of the most consistent players on this team. He's far exceeded anyone's expectations. Even if we got, you know, a 10 to 15% increase in ability from 2023, I was going to consider that a win, and he has far exceeded that. Anything else that you two gents wanted to add?
I'll just say Yoshida heating up a little bit has been good to see. Even when he's making outs, they're loud outs. He is starting to drive the ball a lot more. So I'm hoping it's the sign that he's fully healthy. Maybe the hand thing really was bothering him. And he's healthy and he's starting to hit the ball harder. He's starting to come up in the clutch a little bit more, which is good because they're kind of stuck with him. Thanks, Chaim, for that one. But they're kind of stuck with him. So you just hope that he at least produces something because he's not really fit in the lineup. But if he drives in runs and produces, you'll take it at this point. So it's been good to see him get a little bit hotter.
It absolutely has. I mean, Yoshida has really, I mean, this last month, without looking, how many RBIs do you think Yoshida has in the month of July? Oh, without looking.
Between 10 and 15.
Okay. Nick?
I'd say like 8.
8 RBIs?
Yeah.
So before today's action, 16 RBIs. It's so under the radar because he's only had a couple of home runs, but 16 RBIs. Crazy when you think about it because all of last month, 2. Month before that, 10. So he's been able to knock guys in, which is really, really great for him because it hasn't been happening. What do you think his batting average is this month?
Oh, it's got to be well over 300. He's probably hitting 315.
Yes, I would say about 360.
318 before today's action. So yeah, you guys are both, you know, right on it. Jason, almost right on the money. He's been incredible. Last month, batting 200, just a shell of his former self. So if, you know, Yoshida's hitting a couple singles a game, I don't need you to hit home runs. I don't need you to hit doubles. If you can get guys in and you can hit singles, I don't care. I don't care that, you know, you're drawing, you know, he had 5 straight games with a walk. So I'll take that too. That's an extra hit. So you're getting on base 2, sometimes 3 times in a game. Please, by all means, keep doing that. I'm not going to say anything bad about you. So if there's nothing else, that is going to do it for all of the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Don't let an outdated garage door define your home. Revamp your home's appearance with a new ideal garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection or design your own using our free garage door designer. Hurry in and save big money on your next project. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.